from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The Daily Beast called Andy Borowitz America's satire king. The writer and comedian will join us in studio for Forum's next hour, providing us with some of his well-known Swiftian satire, and we'll discuss his website, borowitzreport.com, and his recently edited volume of humor writings, The 50 Funniest American Writers. Andy Borowitz on the Forum program next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of our Forum program. Humorist, satirist, comedian, and author Andy Borowitz joins us in studio for this Forum Hour, known for the work he publishes in The New Yorker and for his satirical website, borowitzreport.com, which has millions of readers worldwide. He's also the author of 6 books and recipient of the first Humor Award from the National Press Club. And he recently published a volume titled The 50 Funniest American Writers, an anthology from Mark Twain to The Onion. He joins us in studio, and he's also a homeboy, I found out, Cleveland-born and bred, and good to have you here with us, Andy. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Well, you always run into danger when you make up lists. You're bound to get people angry at you, and you've already said this publicly, because they're not going to agree with you, and that's the way you sell books, too, right?
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing, you know, you could do an anthology that said, you know, an anthology of American humor, and this is actually published by the Library of America, which their idea of titling a book is like they'll title a book The Works of Edith Wharton. That's really imaginative. So I was trying to make it a little sexier if I could. And I thought, you know, if I can do a list, that's going to get people's attention because it's going to really annoy the people who aren't included and their families. And that's a great place to start with people with pitchforks and you know, torches coming after you.
Well, when you say the 50 funniest Americans and then you suddenly are American writers and then you suddenly have a list that – I mean, I was looking at some of the responses just online. People said, where's Chris Rock? Where's Tina Fey? I'm thinking to myself, where's Larry David? And of course, most of these people have not necessarily written, but some of them have written.
Well, should I lay out my ground rules?
Of course.
And by the way, they were very arbitrary. The whole fun of doing any kind of anthology is to be as arbitrary as possible. Because the minute you start saying this is definitive, you get into lots of trouble. Like, who are you? Who are you to say this is how it goes? Here was my deal. Performers like Tina Fey or Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, who I worship, are really best enjoyed watching them do what they do, watching them perform. They are writers and they do that too, but it seems like a very hollow version to say, okay, and here's something they wrote too. Larry David too. I mean, Larry David's a brilliant writer and he's written things for the op-ed page in the New York Times, for example, but I'd much rather watch Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'd rather watch Wanda Sykes than read what you have in your anthology.
Really?
So I'm going to quibble with you right away on that. Yeah, it's not that funny.
There you go. Well, there you go. I just lost a sale right there.
No, it's a good anthology. Let me get that right out. But of course people are going to go back and forth and back and forth. That's part of the fun of putting something like this out and saying, this is my list. It has your imprimatur on it.
You know? Exactly. Well, there are certain people, if you do a list of the 50 funniest, you're going to have Mark Twain. I don't think anybody would argue with that. There are probably some people that don't think Mark Twain's funny, but I'd like to know who they are.
Yeah, who are they?
Who they are. I think The Onion, I think you'd have to be pretty grim to not find The Onion funny. Woody Allen. I think Woody Allen's one of those 10 poles. David Sedaris. So maybe out of the 50, there are 10 that you won't get many arguments about. But then...
Andy, Anita Loos and Larry Wilmore. I mean, these are not exactly household names in the world of comedy, but they're funny, of course.
Well, excuse me. Anita Loos is the woman who wrote Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And without Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, the whole notion of the American dumb blonde, which, you know, is kind of a type that's produced so much comedy. That never would have happened. Somebody had to be the first. And Anita Loos was the first. So, but I actually think her writing is brilliant. Also, Larry Wilmore, who some listeners may know as the senior black correspondent on The Daily Show,
She was on this program.
He was on this program. He wrote a very funny book called I'd Rather We Got Casinos, all about being black in America. And it's a very, very funny book. And so I will, you know what? I will defend to the death any of the people that are included on this list. Well, I'm surprised you didn't mention Sinclair Lewis, who, you know, no
one many... wouldn't think of him as a humorist.
Yeah,
one.
But have you read Babbitt? Did you ever read
Babbitt? Yeah, of course, years ago. It is funny.
Babbitt's a hilarious book. And I, you know, my feeling is...
I like your other literary picks more, though, I must confess. Peter DeVries is a great satirist and should be included in any list like this, but people don't know who he is anymore. Bruce J. Friedman, likewise. I mean, gave us the whole notion of black humor, really, or dark humor.
Right. No, these are names, and I throw Terry Southern in there, too. Now, there are some people...
Candy? I mean, you've been called America's great satirist today, but Candy was, you know, a work of satire unmatched in
its
time.
Well, I even think The Magic Christian. That's my favorite.
Also a great satirical
Terry Southern,
work, yeah.
Terry Southern also wrote the screenplay of Dr. Strangelove. So, I mean, to me, like, if I had written either Dr. Strangelove or The Magic Christian, I'd be a happy man. But he wrote both. But here's the thing. One thing that was fun about doing this book was finding people that I've loved for decades, like Terry Southern, who's kind of forgotten now. Mm-hmm. And Terry Southern was so huge in his day. His face was on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, along with James Dean and Marilyn Monroe and all these celebrities. He was so famous at the time.
And Paul McCartney, who was said to be dead, right?
Exactly. But that was, if you think about it, that was only, Sgt. Pepper's was 1967, so that was about 44 years ago. And now Terry Southern, who was such a superstar, such a rock star in the world of comedy writing, is forgotten. It pulls you up short a little bit when you realize how ephemeral this stuff is. But the fun of putting together a book like this is saying maybe there's like a 15-year-old kid out there who's never heard of Terry Southern, and he's going to pick up this book and say, man, this guy's funny. And then he's going to read The Magic Christian. And, you know, that's how we keep the stuff alive, you know, not to get too serious about it, but literature sort of comes in and out. F. Scott Fitzgerald, Evelyn Waugh, these people went out of print for a while. And it's only sort of popular fashion that brings people in and out.
You're restoring people to the humor canon. And
exactly.
I admire Ring Lardner. I mean, people who I have, James Serber, who I have always had a great deal of admiration for. Even Donald Barthelme gets on your list. And what a brilliant humorist he is. We're talking to Andy Borowitz, by the way, who will appear live as part of San Francisco City Arts and Lecture Series this evening at the Herbst Theater at 8 o'clock, being interviewed by our own Paul Lancour. And I'm going to put the question out now to you who are listening. Who are the funniest Americans in writing? I mean, you can go
in
back
writing.
Writing. You can go back as far as you like here, or you can come right up to the present and let
Jonathan
us know.
Edwards, you know, the Puritans, some of those guys.
Sinners in the hands
funny.
Of an angry
sinners
God.
Sinners in the hand of an angry God.
I want to talk with you about sinners and religion, but let me give out the phone number first. And actually, you can join us not only by phone, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. And by the way, I think Andy Borowitz is very funny and one of our funniest American writers. I'll say that right now for the public. But you can join us if you're a member of our public, our listening public, and we welcome your calls. And that's the question I put out there really early on here. Who in print is really funny and maybe would categorize as the funniest American writer or one of the funniest American writers if you had to make a list of 50. We'll see if they're on Andy's list or not. The toll-free number again is 866-733-6786, and you can let us know now. You can also let us know by email, forum@kqed.org, or you can post your pick. If you want to talk to Andy Borowitz, by the way, you can join us by phone or email as well, but you can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment, or join us with any questions or comments you have on Facebook or your contribution to who you think is the funniest writer. We've got a whole list of names here, H.L. Mencken, names that many of you will recognize. John Hughes makes the list, in fact. That's kind of and Roy Blunt Jr., who's been on the show a number of times, Bernie Mac, David Sedaris, other people who we've had on the program here. Never had on Woody Allen, but have had Philip Roth. And so we can look down the list and say many, many forum alumni are here.
That was the original title of the book, by the way, 50 People Who've Been on Forum.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Forum Alumni.
Forum Alumni.
I want to talk about before we go to our callers and find out who they think is funny and get questions and comments for you, I want to talk about the Borowitz Report, because it really amuses me on so many instances. But let's get it out in the open here. There's a definite political bias here. I mean, you go after the GOP. Most of your satire is really directed against Republican candidates, isn't it?
It is. I make no hint of the fact that I've got, you know, I'm a Democrat. I hate to drop a bomb on your audience like that, but yes, I'm a Democrat. Having said that, my main goal is to be funny. I have no political agenda. I mean, you know, some people ask me, you know, do you ever want to get involved in politics? Do you ever want to run for office? And I have to explain to them, I'm comfortable with my role, which is I'm part of the problem. And I want to keep it that way. There was an instance in 2004 when the Democrats nominated John Kerry, and the audience can't look at me right now through the radio, but I bear something of a physical resemblance to John Kerry, and I developed at the time.
You're better looking. You know the old cartoon where he comes into a bar and somebody says, why the long face?
Why the long face? Well, thank you. It's always been my dream to be told I'm better looking than John Kerry. But
I've just fulfilled your dream.
But I actually was going around doing a John Kerry imitation that was scathing, and it was really eviscerating. And the whole point of it was I was getting laughs, so I didn't really care that I was hurting my side. So, yes, if you look at the Borowitz Report, you're going to see I am making fun of Republicans. But come on, it's a target-rich environment right now.
Well, let me just give listeners some examples. If they're not familiar with the Borowitz Report, and you're going to get a lot of people, of course, going to theborowitzreport.com after your appearance here. But PerryCare, this is Andy Borowitz's idea of what would happen to healthcare if Perry was in charge. And apropos of the last hour with Francis Collins, everybody would pray for food, housing, clothing. One of the funniest things recently that I saw on the Borowitz Report was – can you say Borowitz Report or the Borowitz Report?
It's actually Borowitz Report. It's just one word, borowitzreport.com.
There was a Doberman Pinscher growling and snarling at a Tea Party rally and was mistaken for a candidate.
Briefly, yeah. It was a Doberman – it was, I think, rabid dog briefly mistaken for Tea Party candidate. That group has definitely provided a lot of fodder over the last year or so.
They're a little bit like Onion headlines. In fact, what was the headline about there was a poll to find out how many people hypothetically would vote for Perry over Obama, and the Perry supporters asked what hypothetical means.
Well, you know, it's funny. I started doing fake news in college because I was the editor of the Harvard Lampoon, and so there was a Lampoon, and National Lampoon did fake news, and then The Onion came along and kind of made it the gold standard. But when I was doing this humor project and this anthology, I saw that fake news goes way back. And as a matter of fact, if I can give a little literary anecdote, since we're very literary here on public radio, one of Mark Twain's first jobs was he was working for his father-in-law, who owned an actual newspaper. And putting Mark Twain in charge of a newspaper is a really kind of terrible idea, because he would just set in type fake headlines to stories that didn't actually happen. So I think there's kind of, if you're a comedy writer, I think there's something irresistible about the seriousness of the news format that everybody wants to take a whack at.
I never thought of it as a Twain tradition, but there it goes.
Yeah, it goes way back. Everybody, you know, everybody who's ever written comedy wants to make fun of the news.
Well, also, in fact, we were talking with Francis Collins about God in the last hour, and you get a bit irreverent on the on borowitzreport.com when God makes a public statement. We actually see him with his beard and his venerable ancient look and all that.
That's a stock photo.
I assumed it was.
AP photo.
He's talking about Pat Robertson. We can't use profanity here, but
essentially, he tells him to pipe down.
Yeah, to shut the blank up because he was talking about Alzheimer's.
You know, Pat Robertson as a satirist is really the gift who keeps on giving, because I really, you know, when you're writing, I write the Borowitz Report almost every day. And so when you're putting it out that often, you really need continuing characters. It's almost like writing a TV comedy, something else I used to do, where you need characters you can throw to. And you count on them to say something funny. And Pat Robertson, every time I do a story about Pat Robertson, there's a huge leap in traffic on my site, partially because a lot of people are going on the assumption that this is a true story. That you really can't disappoint.
You can't make that stuff up, right?
And you can never sort of disappoint people's low expectations of what Pat Robertson might actually say.
It's Philip Roth's old idea that, you know, what comes out in terms of the television or what comes out in news far exceeds what the imagination can move. But your imagination is really quite rich, especially when you have Gaddafi claiming he's going to be a candidate for the Republican Party. And talk about easy targets. I mean, Michelle Bachmann seems to be one for you, because what do you say when you have Gaddafi running for the Republican nomination, that he has a stronger grasp of history has found out than Michelle Bachmann?
Yeah, well, that is true. I think it's probably a strong grasp of reality. Now, that's a case of Michelle Bachmann's a sort of a sad story for me, because I really wanted to hope that Michelle Bachmann would hang in there longer. She's another one of those.
She's
great,
dropping. Yeah.
I know. And Rick Perry, I mean, I thought, I was saying to my wife, just it seemed like last week, I was saying, Rick Perry is going to be great. Rick Perry is going to make me so happy because he's going to give me so much material. And already Rick Perry seems to be heading down Michelle Bachmann way. So, I mean, if we're stuck with Mitt Romney, that's going to be really bad news for comedy.
And we just found out Chris Christie has announced that he's not running. So
he is
you
not
don't,
running.
You don't have that rather large target.
I know. But, you know, in a way it's good because the, you know, the sort of, you know, obligatory fat jokes about Chris Christie, you know, I sort of didn't want to go there and I'm sort of...
You're above all that.
I'm above all that. Although I did notice that, you know, Herman Cain... and he were sort of going at each other for the last 24 hours. And I was just thinking, you know, Herman Cain is the first pizza guy who's had something bad to say about Chris Christie. I mean, it's really kind of shocking.
Well, that's funny.
Well, it's a little bit elliptical. Yeah. You know, I just don't like when people were doing all these jokes about, you know, if Chris Christie jumps into the, you know, it's like, okay, we get it. He's a large gentleman. Anyway, Chris Christie.
He's William Howard Taft reincarnated.
He is. You know, the thing about Chris Christie, though, there were all those fat jokes that were being done about him, and they were really sort of distracting attention away from the fact that he is a terrible governor. I mean, he is a the thing he has done in New Jersey, and I'm a New York resident, is the first thing. He's one of these Tea Party guys who wants to just cut government. And one of the big things he did was he cut police in New Jersey. And so now, amazingly, New Jersey's murder rate is way up. So Chris Christie has been into job creation if your job is murderer. He's created many more openings for murderers. So actually, if he had run, I think there would have been a lot to talk about besides the fact that he's a large gentleman.
Well, we're talking about a lot here with writer and humorist Andy Borowitz, who again is the proprietor of the website BorowitzReport.com and will appear at the Herb Theater this evening at 8 o'clock.
That's right.
You said you were a comedy writer for TV. What did you write for?
You know, when I graduated from the Lampoon, I was a stand-up comedian. That's how I started. I sort of have doubled back to that. But a Hollywood producer named Bud Yorkin found me. And yeah. Bud was partners with Norman Lear. So they were doing All in the Family.
Well, they did All in the Family, yeah.
And all that. So the very first show I wrote for was Archie Bunker's Place, which was the final... you know, sort of on its last legs.
Swan song for him.
Swan song. It was a point where Chris, you know, Carol O'Connor, who was playing Archie Bunker, was the most powerful man at CBS because that show was always number one, regardless of what he said. People just loved Archie at that point. And he actually had a better parking space, Carol did, than the president of the network. Because that was my first introduction to TV. And I wrote for a bunch of their shows and a bunch of sitcoms. And then in 1990, the president of NBC, Brandon Tartikoff, introduced me to this rapper named Will Smith, the Fresh Prince. And I wound up creating the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, a perfect candidate to do so, a white kid from Shaker Heights, Ohio. But actually, Will and I had a tremendous amount in common, and we really enjoyed each other's sense of humor, and it was a really fun show to do.
He's supposed to be a fun guy.
Incredibly nice.
And a very entertaining guy on a personal level. But you've made this move from writing comedy and stand-up comedy to now being really a satirist and sort of in the Swiftian mode, American version, writing satire that's pretty cutting in many ways and mostly for print and not necessarily for delivery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I do maybe, you know, I think I'm primarily an internet guy. I do 80% of my work is at Borowitz Report. And then I write for The New Yorker and do stand-up and do shows.
Still doing stand-up, yeah.
I do shows, not many. I do shows at the 92nd Street Y in New York, which is a great venue, kind of like City Arts and Lectures here. And I did some things for the New Yorker Festival over the weekend. I'm involved in this show in New York that's on the public radio now called The Moth. I don't know if that's made it out to KQED or not, but The Moth Radio Hour is The Moth is a big podcast, and it's true stories, some of which are really tragic and some of which are really funny. And I try to work the funny side of the street. But yeah, you know, I think I didn't sit down one day and say, enough of these sitcoms, I want to be Swiftian now. But I think with the rise of George W. Bush in, you know, the first decade of this century, this millennium, things you know, the atmosphere was very ripe for satire because suddenly all kinds of really strange things were happening. And I think you almost need a period where it is kind of a target-rich environment for satire to thrive. It's one of these ironies that people like Colbert or Jon Stewart, or in my little way, me, we do better when everything else sucks. Like when the world is bad, we tend to have more to write about. And, you know, sadly, for the last, you know, 10 to 12 years, we've had a lot of tough times here in America. So there's been a lot to write about.
It's also cathartic to write this, isn't it? I mean, and it's you go back to Freud's notion of humor and the unconscious and all that. It's a release of aggression often. I mean, if you're exasperated with politics, write satire.
I'm sort of against the cliche. I think I'm an exception to the cliche about the tortured comedian. I'm actually a really happy person. I think one of the reasons I'm happy is because my venom is constantly being offloaded. I'm on Twitter. Probably a few of your listeners may follow me on Twitter, and I'm probably a little too active on Twitter. But it's really great to be able to see something that outrages you and then just immediately talk about it. I mean, I was talking this thing that's really bugged me over the last week is this whole Bank of America raising their debit card fees arbitrarily.
You had a great news headline on that on BorowitzReport.com.
We did. I was
talking. You want to just give it to us?
Well, I don't know if I can use all those words.
No, you can't use all those words.
I think I have to use the word "but." But it was some. I think it was something along the lines of Bank of America. Well, I was just not really funny. I was just restating the truth, as Mark Twain would say. That's the funniest thing. I just said Bank of America raises fees on people who bailed out their
blanks.
And, you know, I said later on Twitter, and I really feel this seriously.
But you made it like Bank of America was celebrating.
Exactly.
This.
It was a thank you fee.
It was a thank you fee, right.
They wanted to
gratitude.
It was gratitude. And my feeling about Bank of America raising these fees on the people who bailed them out, it's sort of like a guy who's been saved from a burning building turning around and kicking the fireman in his family jewels. That's basically what Bank of America has done to us. Now, I know they're probably, you know, a lot of people in our listening area.
Come on, Eddie. They need bonuses. They need
their third homes.
Right. And fourth
wives.
Actually, it's maybe why you're seeing a lot of young people on Wall Street going a little berserk. I mean, suddenly they got
debit card
and ATM fees, and they're thinking, wait a minute, we bailed them out. We're the taxpayers, and now they're putting these fees on us?
That's right. And, you know, that stuff on Wall Street, you know, cable news is really going to start covering that as soon as this whole Amanda Knox thing is over with. I really do believe they're going to give that the attention it deserves.
Talking again with Andy Borowitz and just looking at lots of emails coming in, lots of people's picks for, funniest writing. In fact, looking right at the top here, are you more envious of Fran Lebowitz's sartorial splendor or her hairstyle choices over the decades?
I'll
just kind of kick things off there. Fran Lebowitz is on your list.
Fran Lebowitz is an interesting case because she was a big humorist in the 70s who's then sort of gone silent. Like, she's been writing supposedly for the last several decades. And I've actually met Fran. She's a really nice person, and she's very mysterious about what she's doing. But she has a very funny piece in the book. She's also got more great one-liners. She's sort of the Dorothy Parker of our era. A lot of really funny jokes.
And Dorothy Parker, of course, has also made the list. And we'll find out who's made your list when we return here. We're talking again with Andy Borowitz. You can see him tonight on stage over at the Herbst Theater, San Francisco, 8 p.m., part of City Arts and Lectures. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. We're talking with Andy Borowitz of BorowitzReport.com, and let's look at some of the funny writings that have come in here, on the web and on the emails, and then we'll go to your calls. Funniest book I've read is Help, A Bear is Eating Me. It's a bizarre novel. Another good one is The Menstruating Mall by a writer I've never heard of.
Those did not make the list.
Carlton Mellick. No, they're...
But that sounds like good product placement to me on the radio.
A few here. Hello, Michael. Hello, Andy. Thanks for the show. I'm relatively young and was recently introduced by older family members to Patrick McManus. I've read two of his books and have never laughed so hard while reading a book. I love that material connects with rural and mid-America.
You know, Patrick McManus is a great humorist. I should preface this because I think we're going to get a lot of other submissions like this. I originally put together a list of 100, my top 100 funniest. Patrick McManus was on that list. And
he didn't make the 50 cut.
You know what happened is the Library of America, I gave it to them and I said, you know, you whittle it down and tell me who you think. And then their 50, I by and large agreed with. We couldn't include all 100, but Patrick McManus, he's another one. Bill Bryson, another one who's great. We have some people sort of in that genre of more folksy stuff. Like, for example, Garrison Keillor is on the list.
He's on the list, but, you know, William Buckley Jr. is not.
You mean Chris Buckley?
I mean Chris Buckley, William Buckley's son, yes.
Yeah, he should be in volume two. He's very funny. He's a very funny guy.
John Kennedy O'Toole, hands down, Confederacy of Dunces. A few of those, actually, have been. And why is it okay to make fun of blondes? I've been very blonde my whole life, writes Carolyn. I'm tired of everyone thinking I'm dumb just because of my hair color, which I can't help.
Right. Well, I think, well, you can't help it. Of course, you could change your hair color.
Peroxide?
No, but actually, Anita Loos was a blonde. She was making fun of herself, and we all, you know, we all do self-deprecating humor. But I don't do blonde jokes. I think they're just another version of kind of, you know, like Polish jokes or anything where you're taking a class of people and making fun of them.
Or Jan Carey look-alike jokes.
Right, exactly. But Anita Loos, what she did in her, I don't want to state the case too vigorously from one of the 50, but what was great about her dumb blonde was she was the dumb blonde who wasn't really so dumb. It's like she was a showgirl and all these guys were trying to shower her with gifts, but she kind of really was at the controls. And I think that's what's really lovely about her.
Well, I'm at the controls here with the phones, and let's go to them. In fact, Scott from Philadelphia, you're first up. Good morning.
Hey, I was curious if David Foster Wallace made the list. You know, Infinite Jest, I think, is probably one of the best satirical novels, at least in my time. I'm about 34 years old, and, you know, I think it was kind of a prophetic piece of satire.
David Foster Wallace is very funny. He's not on the list, but, you know, you have a problem because he's a suicide. I mean,
that's not a problem because a lot of comedians, I mean, Lenny Bruce is on the list, and also a suicide who is on the list is Hunter S. Thompson. So, I mean, and here's the thing. I agree with you. I'm a huge David Foster Wallace fan, and I'm a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan.
Who also did not make the list.
Let me explain why just before the pitchforks come out.
Top email here. Look at it. Kurt Vonnegut, right?
Kurt Vonnegut. We've gotten so much Kurt Vonnegut. Novelists are tough because, you know, and Confederacy of Dunces is a great example. That's one of the funniest books ever written. Infinite Jest, clearly. I mean, what about Catch 22? Brilliantly funny book. It's a little bit hard to take five pages out of those books and put them in an anthology and say, this really nails it. This is what's great about Catch 22 or Infinite Jest. You have to sit down and actually read the book. Confederacy of Dunces, same thing. So,
but there's a great dialogue between Yossarian and, you know, I mean, right when you get to the title and why the title is Catch 22. And
that's
he's
right.
Told we can't go on the missions and complain about insanity.
But, you know, I read a bunch of anthologies where they tried to do this exact thing, where they would take like a slice out of a book. And we do it in a couple of instances in this. I happen to think a book like The Magic Christian is so episodic that you can take one chapter out and you kind of get the general idea because one chapter is almost exactly like the next chapter. But, you know, with Kurt Vonnegut, here's what Library of America is going to do. They're actually publishing two entire volumes of Kurt Vonnegut. And I think that's a better way to go because with all the books that, you know, I just mentioned, including Infinite Jest, go out and read the book. That's the way you're going to see. And clearly, in a really complete list of the funniest American writers, you'd have to put David Foster Wallace there, right near the top.
Does the Library of Congress have a more imaginative title for the collection?
Library of America, excuse me.
Yeah,
I believe it's Kurt Vonnegut. I think that's the works of Kurt Vonnegut.
Here's Heidi from San Luis. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, I think that David Sedaris is one of the best comic writers, and he has a really good way, too, of ending the stories in a poignant way that can also make you cry sometimes.
Yeah, well, guess what? You are a winner.
He's
David
on the list.
David Sedaris is on the list. And, yeah, I mean, the problem with David Sedaris for a guy who's trying to put an anthology together is which story do you pick? I mean, they're so great and there are so many. I happen to pick one you might be familiar with because he's performed at all about this this item that he bought for his book tour called A Stadium Pal. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm wearing one now.
You're wearing one now. Isn't it a warm feeling you're getting? But he's, you know, David, I once did a show with him for The New Yorker, and David Sedaris, you know, as good as he is on the radio, it was so cool to see how he works, because he was reading his material, performing it, and sort of editing it as he was doing it. He was seeing where the laughs were. He was crossing things out. He has such a discipline. And it, you know, it reminded me a little bit of Mark Twain, because Mark Twain was really like America's first stand-up comedian. He toured the country reading this material, refining it. And, you know, it's so cool to see how comedy works in front of an audience, because it's all about clearly timing, but it's all about concision too.
But and I can tell you that the first time Davis was on David was on the radio was here,
mm-hmm.
And he was really quite nervous. And I mean, he's honed his art in terms
of public stuff.
Yeah,
that was like the early 90s, I guess. And I remember I used to live in LA, and I would drive around. I was listening to, I guess, All Things Considered, maybe, and I was hearing like little slices of him. And right off the bat, it was when he was still cleaning apartments in New York City for a living. And immediately I was grabbed, because it's like, wow, this guy is hilarious. And where did that voice come from? And so, yeah, thrilled to have David Sedaris on the list. But I would really be run out of town if there was no David Sedaris on the list.
There is a link, by the way, to the entire list on our website. Simply go to kqed.org/forum and you can find names. Actually, O. Henry is a name that surprised me, but then I thought some of the stories actually are funny, and you got a nice slice here.
Yeah, Ransom of Red Chief. Well, you know, there's a category of writers in the book, and I put John Hughes in this category too, and Garrison Keillor, great storytellers. Gene Shepherd. You know, we have a lot. There's a lot of variety. You know, there are people who write this kind of New Yorker casuals, you know, or like David Sedaris, who wrote for Esquire and the New Yorker, that are sort of funny ideas, funny essays. But then there are really great short stories. And O. Henry, you know, the O. Henry Short Story Prize is named for him, because he's, in addition to being one of our great comic writers, he's just a great storyteller. And The Ransom of Red Chief, which probably a lot of people had to read for school at some point or another, is one of the cleverest stories in the world. And yesterday, I was on the plane to San Francisco. I was reading one of the best British comic novelists, Evelyn Waugh, reading Decline and Fall. And I saw that in the middle of this brilliant novel, Evelyn Waugh totally lifted the story of Ransom of Red Chief. So it's like, that's pretty amazing. It's like, if you're so funny that Evelyn Waugh is ripping you off, that's pretty good.
You know who else was actually speaking about British comedy? Of course, Kingsley Amis with Lucky Jim made a major impact in terms of comic novels.
If I were doing the 50 funniest English writers, you know that book, Lucky Jim, is my favorite comic novel of all time. I would say in America, maybe it's The Magic Christian, but overall, Lucky Jim. If everybody has their iPad or their Kindle or whatever, download Lucky Jim and start reading it as soon as the show is over.
That's very funny. And we've got, you know, some of the – Langston Hughes appears here. Also
– Surprising choice.
Home boy. I'm not supposed to use the word boy with African-Americans, but, you know, former Negro laureate poet, as he was known, and the man who gave us this just simple stories. And you take one of those simple stories.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was a discovery for me because, again – you know, when you're putting together the list of the 50 funniest, Langston Hughes doesn't immediately strike you as a laugh riot. But, you know, Philip Roth is in there, too. There are a few names of people who you think of not primarily for their comedy writing. But, of course, Philip Roth, when he started, was primarily a comedy writer. I mean, a book like Goodbye Columbus is a great comic novel, Portnoy's Complaint. And Langston Hughes wrote these great simple stories, which is about this Harlem character named Semple, actually, S-E-M-P-L-E, but they're called the Simple Stories because he was this kind of innocent. He was this sort of naive guy who he was constantly making these pronouncements that at the same time were kind of dumb but also brilliant and wise. And the Library of America, I've got to say, they really turned me on to those
Hughes
stories.
Yeah.
You know, because I was, you know, looking at some of his stuff because I knew he had a reputation as a comic writer in addition to what he's famous for. And these stories are wonderful. They're really like American fables. They're really beautiful, funny stories.
I also think people, you know, you were talking about getting 15-year-olds to read some of these writers that they wouldn't be familiar with otherwise. I wish young people would read writers like S.J. Perlman again, you know, because – or Benchley.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's reason why they're icons to humorists like you and people who appreciate humor like me and remain icons.
Well, here's an interesting through line, and I didn't mention this in the introduction of the book, but I'll say it on KQED. It shows how, like, this is a through line of American humor. Ring Lardner, who's in the book, was so influential. He's a sports writer, but comedy writer. So influential that S.J. Perlman said, you know, I have ripped off Ring Lardner so much, it's amazing I haven't been sued for plagiarism. S.J. Perlman was one of the most influential writers on Woody Allen's writing. Woody Allen completely looked back to S.J. Perlman and acknowledges that S.J. Perlman was a huge influence.
He was also
on him.
The brother-in-law of Nathaniel West.
That is correct.
And Nathaniel West is also a very funny writer.
He was on my original list.
Dark comedy, but funny.
Yeah. Now, when we get to Woody Allen, so we've gone Ring Lardner to S.J. Perlman and Woody Allen.
This is Andy's genealogy.
Yes. Yeah. And Woody Allen was one of the biggest influences ever on the stand-up of Chris Rock. So we're gone from Ring Lardner to Chris Rock, and we see like this kind of, you know, leapfrog, you know, lily pads of American comedy. I know I'm sounding very nerdy right now, but I'm excited about the topic.
And no Mel Brooks, because again,
yeah,
more performing.
Rent the movies, you know, again, like Rent, Blazing Saddles, or The Producers, much funnier than reading, you know, a screenplay excerpt.
Well, here's a name I wouldn't have expected in this hour. Carol, you're mentioning our former colleague, Scoop Nisker.
That's right. That's right. I think he's got a kind of a unique approach to humor and wisdom, the essential crazy wisdom. I really love that book.
Scoop was a radio colleague for many years who said, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own.
Well, that's that.
His famous quip. Yeah,
I would agree with that. Well, you know, we don't have Scoop, who I must confess I'm not familiar with, but we do.
Local boy.
But we do have Gene Shepard, who's a great, you know, Philadelphia radio icon, who went on to write a pretty famous series of stories all about growing up and Christmas in his childhood.
Lovely stories, yeah.
And that became the movie, the basis for the movie A Christmas Story, which is kind of unavoidable at Christmas time. But it was fun to go back to Gene Shepard's original prose. He's another guy like John Hughes who, you know, we know of them from these movies that are played endlessly and endlessly on TV, but it's great to go back. We have this story that's almost, I don't think it's ever been in an anthology before, by John Hughes, called Vacation 57. And this was a story he wrote for the National Lampoon, and it became the basis for the first Vacation film, which is still a hilarious movie if you ever catch it on TV. But it was great to go back to the original source material and say, man, John Hughes is like, he's up there with O. Henry. He could write a great short story.
Talking to Andy Borowitz, his book is The 50 Funniest American Writers, according to Andy Borowitz, an anthology of humor from Mark Twain to The Onion. And you can join us at our toll-free number 866-733-6786, or join us on Facebook or email us forum@kqed.org if you have a selection that you would like on your list, or let us know who is maybe even right at the top of your list. You can also go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. On Facebook, Dave writes, I've enjoyed Steve Martin's writing, Pure Drive in particular.
Kurt Drivel.
Melanie writes, love Calvin Trillin, who was just on the show last week.
And is in the list. He's on this.
He is
great
on the
piece.
List. John writes, funniest writer, Groucho Marx.
Interesting.
Kim writes, Nora Ephron, who is on the list.
On the list, yeah.
Just to go through some of these. Question for Andy, will his new book be available as an e-book for Kindle, iBook? Want to pre-order it on Amazon but found only hard copy. And Sandra and I are looking forward to seeing Andy tonight at Herb. Sandra is taking me as a birthday gift.
Oh.
That's from Mark.
Thank you, Sandra and Mark. And
these are friends of yours?
No, but they are now. But they should say hello after the show. But you know what? Good question. The book is now, if you'd like to read it in hardcover, you go to the Borowitz Report and you can click on it, you can get it. But it will be available in all those formats in November. So if you really want it for your iPad or your Kindle, just hang in for another month.
And here's another name that made the Borowitz list. E.B. White, especially in his essays, Death of a Pig, The Eye of Edna, are two fine examples.
Yeah. White and Thurber, and they collaborated together quite a lot at The New Yorker, both on the list.
Brooke writes, I remember as a very young woman reading a book called The Complete Practical Joker by H. Allen Smith. It was very funny, and I have never forgotten them. I'm in my 70s now. Thank you, Brooke.
I'm an H. Allen Smith fan. He's not on the list, but I love Practical Jokes, and those books are – he wrote a number of those books. Those are really funny.
When I was a teenager, Paul writes, I laughed a lot at Board of the Rings, a satire by the then editors of the Lampoon. I think it was still at Harvard. Were you part of that?
That was before my time. However, I should say this. That was written by two gentlemen named Henry Beard and Doug Kenny. Henry Beard is on the list. And Board of the Rings is going to be a special bonus of the ebook version. There's going to be a selection from – Board of the Rings is kind of one of those – it's almost like the Rosetta Stone of modern comedy, because that gave rise to the National Lampoon, which gave rise to Saturday Night Live and The Onion and everything that's come since. So Board of the Rings, that's was funny then. It's still really
you
funny.
You are an oral historian of comedy, aren't you?
I am.
You obviously take pride in that. We're going to get some more of your calls, and then we'll go to more of your emails and the like. But we got Barry joining us from Oakland. Hi, Barry.
Hi. Yeah, I'd like to mention a couple of novelists I think are pretty funny. Well, Christopher Moore, Lamb, I thought was a great book. And someone who you wouldn't consider to write kind of humorous novels is Tim O'Brien, Tomcat in Love, I thought was just a great, funny novel.
I like both those guys a lot. Again, you know, Tim O'Brien, I agree. You know, Tim O'Brien can write both in both modes, and that's something that I think
most people associate him with writing about war, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, this is one thing that I've addressed a little bit when I've talked to people about the book, but also it's just a fact. Most people who are really good, serious writers have a sense of humor. If you read a book that was just 100% of seriousness, it wouldn't be a very good book. As a matter of fact, people like Chekhov and Kafka, who we now treat so seriously, consider themselves comedy writers. They consider themselves funny. And
you know, when Kafka used to read The Hunger Artist, he would laugh hysterically. It's hard to believe because it's such a sort of depressing story in many ways.
It depends. But, you know, Chekhov, you know, if you see Chekhov perform, like, The Three Sisters is a very funny play because those sisters are just, after a while, it's like, enough with the kvetching about Moscow, please. It does get funny.
Is that your Shaker background? Kvetching?
You kvetching. Say
kvetch?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that how they rolled in Cleveland
that's,
Heights?
That's more Cleveland Heights.
My apologies.
Let me thank the caller and go to more of your calls. Sonoma caller joining us. Daryl, hi.
Hi.
Yes, sir. You're on
Andy,
the air.
Andy, I worked with you on your first job.
What was that?
With Bud Yorkin.
Oh, my God.
I'm Daryl Ponickson.
Oh, my God. Daryl Ponickson?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is unbelievable. Where are you now, Daryl?
I'm in Sonoma.
Now, Daryl.
California.
Daryl is one of the great funny writers in America because Daryl is the author of The Last Detail. Didn't I get that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
That wasn't one of my funniest.
But it was pretty. It was pretty funny.
What was your funniest, Daryl?
You and I were working on a picture called Lethal Gas.
That's
which
right.
Was a comedy about capital punishment.
And you know what? Probably good idea to not make a movie with the word "lethal" in the title. Just
lethal weapons. That was a big
lethal. That's true, and that was pretty funny too. That was pretty. Daryl was really the first. I moved out to California. At the age of 22, a stand-up comic, and knew absolutely nothing about screenwriting. And a lot of what I learned from reading Daryl Ponickson, because Daryl was this, you know, masterful novelist. You know, they're very.
But you were in Southern California, right?
Yeah, but there are very few people who can write novels and write screenplays because they're such different. Novels are this, you know, a literary form, and screenplays are a visual form. And F. Scott Fitzgerald couldn't do it, for example. But Daryl. I was just this very intimidated. Also, Daryl's like a real macho guy. Like, Daryl's been in the service and stuff, so he was very intimidating.
And Daryl, you wanted to make a contribution to this list of your own. It's Max Schulman, huh?
I do, but let me just mention that I followed Andy's career with great interest because when I first met him, he wasn't funny at all. He was scared to death. And I just thought he was a wonderful guy, and I'm glad he's been so successful. And my pick would be Max Schulman. Who wrote Rally Around the Flag, Boys.
Barefoot Boy with Cheek, yeah.
And Dobie Gillis. Actually, Max Schulman. See, now I'm strong enough. I've grown up enough as a man that I can now actually have a conversation with Daryl Ponickson. It shows some sense of growth on my part.
Maturity.
But Max Schulman was on my list of the top 100. Actually, my agent, Mort Janklow, says that he wrote the funniest first line of any novel ever, Max Schulman, which was like, bang, bang, bang. I took three shots in my groin. I was off on the greatest adventure of my life. And then he just completely moves on from there. He doesn't address what that was all about. But Max Schulman is a great one. How are you doing, Daryl?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. I'm an artist sculptor these days. I haven't written anything in a few years.
I'll tell you what. Why don't we get your phone number. Kevin will get your phone number and hand it to Andy, and maybe you two can relink up and talk about old times.
Fantastic. It's so great to hear from you.
Nice listening to you, Andy.
Daryl, thank you for the call. And let me put that on hold, and Kevin, pick up his phone number if you would, and we'll go to San Jose and welcome Elizabeth. Good morning.
Good morning. First, thank you. This has been wonderful to listen to, and I've added so many writers to my to-read list. But the two main ones I wanted to add were Anne Lamott and A.J. Jacobs.
Oh, my God. A.J. is a really good friend of mine. And I must confess that A.J. is on the list of my top 100. A.J. writes these. You see, we've got to do volume two. The 50 other funniest American writers. AJ writes these great, I don't know if he's ever been on your show. Has he been here?
I don't believe so.
He writes these great, he's sort of the new incarnation of Tom Wolfe because he's a participatory journalist.
Who's also very funny.
Yeah, and Tom Wolfe's
in
the book.
He's on your list.
He's on the list. AJ wrote a book called The Know-It-All where he read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica to see if he could get smarter. And then he wrote a book called The Year of Living Religiously, The Year of Living Biblically, all about trying to obey the biblical laws for an entire year of his life.
I remember that. Yeah,
and AJ, AJ is great. And Anne Lamott, also great. Not a personal friend. I can't drop her name. But she's there's so many great short story writers. I think Michael Chabon's very funny.
He's
another great guy. It's just we have such a wealth of comedy in this country that's why the title, The 50 Funniest, is kind of a joke in and of itself.
Well, the next one will be The 50 Who Didn't Make the List. That would be Mary from Vallejo. Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
You're on.
Good morning. Thanks.
Morning.
I was wondering if you made the list, but Tom Robbins, one of my favorite writers, Jitterbug Perfume, Skinny Legs and All, just a great writer. I don't know.
Cowgirls Got the Blues. I remember that. I'm thinking it was like eating cotton candy a bit. But
I was a little disappointed in the film version of that, but there's so many other books that he's written that just I'm always falling off my chair laughing, and hopefully he'll make the second volume.
You know, he's a great one. And you know, another guy who I just ran into at the New Yorker Festival last week and who's I think is an extremely funny but also just a really deep writer is T.C. Boyle. I think he's another great
he
one.
He can be very funny.
I mean, somebody should do like a good anthology of just our great novelists and pull together some of this stuff because it is amazing.
I think Greasy Lake, I mean, it's a troubling story, but it is hilarious, really.
Yeah.
I mean, about teenage whatever. Here's a listener says, would the guest care to offer any comments, insights, or anecdotes about his experiences with the PBS-aired Need to Know first season? The revolving door of on-air staff alone suggests major changes. What can Andy opine or reveal?
You know, I loved all the people I worked with, and they were so nice. It was a really good experience. But I just feel like I was totally unaware of how hard it is to do a public TV show. I was involved very tangentially. I did a few commentaries at the end of it. But I think PBS has it's not a real network, actually. It's like it's a consortium of stations. And, you know, it's like when I did network TV, I would never say this, you know, I never would have thought this, but it's actually easier to do a show for NBC than it is for PBS, because at least there it's like you're thumbs up, thumbs down, you're canceled, you're on or whatever. PBS, I feel like, you know, I think it's a really hard show. I have nothing but admiration for people who can get a show on PBS and make it work, because it's hard, I think.
Here's Lori. Lori, you think we're ignoring women writers here, huh?
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, I was kind of shocked because I just hear men after men.
Okay.
I don't mean to be a sour old, you know, feminista hag, but I will read all the men writers that you guys suggested, but I'm just shocked that you haven't mentioned, you know, any like Amy Sedaris, Virginia Woolf, Lori Natavo, and even...
Okay, Virginia Woolf at last count is not American. So let me just...
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with Sloane Crosley?
We mentioned Nora Ephron. We mentioned Fran Lebowitz. Dorothy Parker.
Wanda Sykes, who Michael doesn't like.
Yeah, but I love her on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
We've got, you know, women writers, in fairness, for a historical... a historical anthology. Women writers have been much more active post-war in America than pre-war. That's just a historical fact. Comedy writers, but post-war, they're very well represented.
Not
in the
only
book.
Comedy writers. I happen to teach contemporary American fiction, and they really begin to make their mark after the war.
But you know, between Nora Ephron, Sloane Crosley, Fran Lebowitz, the list goes on. It's really, when you get into the book, you'll see we've done our homework. And Anita Luce, you know, was really sort of digging back into the past to find somebody great. So believe me, I think and another great one, Jenny Allen, who's not a big name. She writes for The New Yorker, and she's married to Jules Pfeiffer. And she's represented in the book. So.
I think Jenny Egan is very funny. You know,
love Jennifer Egan. But that's read Visit from the Goon Squad. I mean, just read her book because she's very, very funny.
And a listener writes, you already mentioned Ray Blunt Jr. Please mention Fran Lebowitz, who we haven't heard from lately. We did mention her. She once said she wouldn't mind prayer in school if they would teach algebra in church.
She also said never discuss sex with small children. They have very little to add, which I think is a great line.
And Michael, some of the listeners are trying to be funny themselves. I'm totally shocked to hear that Michelle Bachmann is a real person. I was sure that some satirist made her up.
She should have been on the list, by the way, but she can't write.
Robert Sweet Old Bob Benchley. I never heard Sweet Old Bob. And here's another one for Steve Martin. And let's see what Joe says. I'd like to give a shout out for Funny Times, a monthly newspaper. And that's Raymond Lesser, who
from Cleveland
grew up on my street.
Great guy. And the Borowitz Report is a regular feature of Funny Times. So that people should subscribe to Funny Times. Although I should say subscribing to the Borowitz Report is free. But still, Funny Times is excellent.
Well, the same guy who's plugging Raymond Lester says, my vote for funniest writer is Dave Barry, who always catches me unawares.
On the list.
And on the list. And just saw him down at Carmel, and he was hilarious.
Oh, unbelievably great.
Andy, if he has thought about writing a compilation of In Other News, often the funniest part of the report.
Oh, the elsewheres. Yeah, you know, at the end of my stories, they often end with, you know, elsewhere, blah, 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 blah. That's what – you should go to my Twitter feed because that's really where those things kind of originate now. So if you follow Borowitz Report on Twitter, that's the best source for that stuff.
People mentioning Sarah Vowell, people mentioning Carl Hyacin. I mean, there are a lot of names.
Carl Hyacin's another one.
He's very
great,
funny.
Great novelist. Go to the novels.
Mark Halperin, one of the few Republican novelists. It's true. Christopher Moore again, and on it goes. Sorry if we didn't get you on, but it's been a lot of fun here. And the 50 funniest American writers, according to Andy Borowitz. That's a lot of fun, too.
And I did not, I should say, I did not make the list. I didn't make my own list. So
well, you make
that?
Mine. And it's been fun having you on here. A delight. Thanks so much for being with me.
Thanks, Michael.
We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.